This podcast is sponsored by University Bookstore. Join the Pack Rewards and save 10% on Husky gear every day, even on game day. Join the Pack today at ubookstore.com. This podcast is brought to you by Adidas. Same dogs, new threads. Head to huskyteamstore.com to check out the new collection.
Hey guys, this is Hannah, and you are listening to Wellness Weekly, where we recap what's going on in the wellness section. So if you don't have time to pick up the paper, don't worry, because apparently I do. Today I am joined by Ash Shaw. Say hi.
Hey.
Ash Shaw is a really cool writer at The Daily. She writes how do you say it?
Procrastinating, but with caffeine.
That's so funny. It's for the arts and leisure section. And then she also writes Steminism for Science, which had that was the first article, like, last week?
Yeah, last week was the first one, and then next Monday will be the next one.
That's so cool. That is such a strong, I love the article. Such a strong beginning. And then Ash, what we're going to talk about today, has also written a new piece for wellness called Blood Donation 101, A Crash Course in Donating Blood and Why You Shouldn't Be Afraid. So I think this is a really cool piece. So Ash, tell me, why did you want to write about blood donation?
Actually, it started when Mac pitched out an article about China lifting the ban on blood donation. So I wasn't expecting this to be a huge story. It was supposed to be like a short, like 500-word piece. And then I went to interview the people at BloodWorks, and it was such an amazing interview that I emailed Mac, and I was like, hey, can I make this a feature? Like, there's so much to work with over here. So much that I didn't realize the impact of blood donation. Like, I thought it was like, cool, you do it when there's like a blood drive and like that's it. And yeah, I was looking into it and I was just so interested, and I was like, let this be like a whole thing just about blood donation, and then I'll mention China, because the China thing wasn't enough to be a whole story, but the amount that people don't know about blood donation. I didn't know about blood donation. Yeah.
That's so cool. That's like just like, that makes like my journalist heart happy that you found so much passion in something you weren't expecting to. So you start off the article by saying, blood donation as a process is not scary. However, in the telling and retelling of stories of fainting and getting sick, it has cultivated a reputation for itself as a terrifying thing. It's not. So I have a bone to pick with that statement. Have you ever given blood?
I have.
Okay.
I've actually only donated blood one time because, like I said, I didn't really realize like this was such a big thing. And now that I've interviewed them, like, I've decided, like, every 56 days, I'm going to donate.
Wait, really?
I'm, like, making a promise to myself that I'm going to do this.
Wait, you're so cool. Do you have, like, a reminder in your calendar?
I do.
Every 56 days, exactly?
I'm going to go next week for my first one, and then...
Wait, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. How was your experience the first time you donated blood? Not too bad, obviously.
So I don't get squeamish around blood, which I know a lot of people do, and, like, that's valid, like, tons of my friends are.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience wasn't that bad, or, like, not at all. I also was not able to donate at all in high school, because there's a very strict weight requirement in California. They take it super seriously, and I never met it, so I wasn't able to donate until I was 18, and then I really wanted to, so I was really excited to donate, and I was like, okay, this is cool, but I just never did it again. So, like, my experience, like, wasn't bad, which is crazy that like I had a good experience and then I didn't go back, and so that's why I'm like committing now that I will.
Okay, that's so cool. So I agree, it's not that scary. Like, it's not like horror movie scary or like haunted house scary or like sexism scary, but it's scary. Like, I'm not a blood person,
right.
I get like literally saying the word blood as often as we've been saying, I like can't feel my fingers right now. Like, I just get so freaked out about it. And when I gave blood, it was, like, on a whim, which, like, that's how I do it, I guess. And I was anxious the whole time, and the doctor made, like, this really scary joke that it was his first day. And I know he was trying to lighten the mood, but it did not do that at all. And it hurt really bad, like, afterwards, and, like, I felt weak the whole rest of the day. And then I had this, like, massive bruise for, like, probably 3 or 4 weeks after. So I think they might have done it wrong.
It's possible.
Yeah, but reading your article and hearing you talk about how passionate you are about giving blood every 56 days, that might inspire me to try again. Maybe when I'm more hydrated. I definitely was not in the physical state to probably give blood, and that's probably why I had such a negative experience. So, right off the bat in the article, you explain the two methods of donating blood. Can you give us a little recap on that?
Yeah. So, there's four types of blood donation, and it's done in one of two ways. With, like, the first method, you can do the first three types of blood donation. So, yeah, just complicated. but there's two methods, basically. And then the first one is called apheresis. This is the, like, fancier one. People don't do this as much. It's where you give a very specific part of your blood. So, you can either donate red blood cells, platelets, or plasma. So in this one, they'll hook you up to the little machine, and then at Bloodworks, they, like, let you sit and watch a movie because it takes an hour and a half, and okay. So you just, like, hang tight. And so it'll take out your blood, it'll filter out the plasma, and then it'll give the rest back to you, which is why one of the three, I want to say platelets, but, like, don't hold me to it, you can do, I think, almost every 7 days because you're getting almost everything back, and your body doesn't need that long to, like, regenerate everything. Mm. And so that one's, it takes longer, but, yeah, you're giving a very specific thing, a specific part of your blood. And then the second method is what, like, we do when we go to all these blood drives, which is whole blood donation, where they just take a unit of your blood.
Okay. The needle. Very cool. You brought up the plasma thing, which I was actually talking to one of my coworkers about this episode of Wellness Weekly and your article, and I was talking about blood donation and stuff, and then he brought up, he was like, oh, yeah, like, why would you donate it when you could sell it? I was like, what kind of black market crazy thing are you doing selling your blood? And then he's like, no, it's like a real thing, like, you can sell your plasma, and apparently you can get like $100 or something crazy, like up to $500 in some cases, and they still call it donating,
which is weird. That's, yeah, like being it's like being paid to volunteer.
Yeah, I didn't get exactly. So how do you feel about that, like, from an ethical point of view, and do you know anything about the process at all?
I actually don't know anything about that, because I remember in my interview that I think whole blood, maybe, you're not allowed to be compensated for a lot of, like, when you are donating an organ, like, no one can pay you for that, because
right.
I feel like, ethically speaking, like, it's a slippery slope to that being misused, yes, to, like, no end. Sure, for some people, it's, like, to make a couple hundred bucks, mm-hmm, but then for some people, it's, like, their whole life, so they'll go way more than is healthy just to make some money, and I feel like, mm-hmm, at that point, it's, like, detrimental.
Yeah.
So I'd say no, that, like, I didn't know about the plasma thing. I guess that one, if anything, maybe plasma is the one that takes 7 days to regenerate. Mm-hmm. If it's safer for your body to donate plasma, then that might be okay. Yeah. As opposed to, like, giving an organ, which is major surgery.
Mm-hmm. You brought up organ donations. Like, if you're compensated for organ donations, then only, like, the rich are going to be helped when they need, like, organs.
It's also true.
And so the whole, like, perpetual, yeah, poverty thing, and that's just not good. But also, my friend and I were talking about it, and he was telling me that when you donate, but are compensated, right, for your plasma, it's because it's going towards science? Like, it's scientific research?
Oh, I think that's different. Okay. I think, like, that makes, because that's the same way that you can be, like, compensated for, like, giving sperm.
Well, oh,
I guess, but that's
okay,
not usually for research. That's for people to use. But right. I know, like, you can be compensated for, like, participating in, like, medical studies and stuff. Like, if it's for science and if it's going to, like, move research forward, I think you're allowed to be compensated. So okay, if you're just donating, like, a sample, they can ensure that you're not doing it at a dangerous thing,
interesting,
right? I think that might be it. Because I know you can be compensated for science stuff. Like, people who go to, like, psych labs, they, like, hook their brains up to stuff. And, like, it's
right,
for science. And they know they do it in, like, a safe way. Yeah.
Okay, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, we're just, like, hypothesizing.
Yeah,
you know?
Don't know.
We're workshopping some ideas right now. So then next in the article, you talk about who can donate blood. So can you recap that for us as well?
Yeah, so in the state of Washington, anyone over the age of 18, in, like, a good standard state of, like, a reasonable state of health, can donate. And then if you're 16 or 17, you have to meet a weight requirement and then also have parental consent, which is why they usually target college-age students, because that's when you're, like, able to do it without having to, like, go through all the hoops of, like, getting a permission slip signed or whatever,
mm-hmm,
which is why we have trucks on campus all the time, because this is the demographic they're trying to hit.
Yeah, yeah. So there's, like, the misconception about, like, diabetic people.
Right.
So they can, if you explain that for me.
Yeah, so if their diabetes is stable, I believe, I'm sure there's a bar that they have to hit, mm-hmm, but I think it said if you're reasonably healthy and your diabetes is stable, then you can donate. And then the same thing, so there's a lot of travel restrictions on people donating blood. So if you've been to a country where there's a risk of malaria, then you may have to defer your blood donation for a year or sometimes 3 years. It's a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Depending on the country.
So you defer, like, as in you, like, can't donate blood for a year to 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. And then, as you said in the beginning, like, the reason this article even came to be was because of the travel ban, travel restriction. What was that phrasing?
The same thing that I was just talking about, oh, the, okay. like, travel thing. China had a minimum one-year deferral because it was labeled as a country with a malaria risk.
Oh, okay.
And I think that deferral ban was finally lifted. And since there's 4,000 students on campus who identify as being part of, like, a majorly ethnically Chinese group, mm-hmm. and who probably constantly travel back and forth, this just opens up a whole huge new pool of donors.
Yeah, for real. 4,000 more people. Yeah. That's, like, that's awesome. If they're all committed to 56, every 56 days going back, dang, that's some blood right there. So let's talk a little bit about the questionnaire before.
Yeah.
I don't understand the relevance of some of the questions, and mm-hmm. I think they, like, might be problematic, but I also might be, like, dangerously liberal and often misinformed. So please inform me. Do you know, like, why they ask if you've had sex in exchange for drugs or money? And also, I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard they ask men if they've had sex with other men. Is this the case? Do you know anything about that?
That is true. So, disclaimer, I'm not super, like, right. informed about all of this. I have done, like, a decent amount of research. Like, I know they do ask if you have been paid for sex or if you've had sex with a prostitute. Like, I know these are questions that are on there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know anything about... I haven't done any research on that. I mm-hmm. only recently, just, like, in passing, saw that. But I do know a little bit about the question that asks if men have had sex with men.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit of research. But I think this rule first started, like, at the height of, like, the AIDS epidemic.
Right.
And so they just wanted to, like, decrease the risk of transmission at the point. So this was, like, in the 80s. And at that point, there was, like, a ban. Like, if you had sex with a man, then you could not. If a man had sex with a man, they could not donate ever.
Mm.
And then, I want to say 2015, they changed it to a one-year deferral.
Okay.
But I agree. It is a little problematic because I was looking into... the research a little bit, and so this also, during my interview, the vice president of, like, executive blood services did tell me this, that whenever they, all the blood samples that they collect are tested heavily afterwards before they're, like,
right,
given to anyone, and I saw this statistic online somewhere that, but they say that the reason that they have this ban is, like, even, like, they don't want to, like, increase the chance of HIV transmission or anything, but currently, after all the tests that they run, like, 1 out of 3 million blood samples will maybe be HIV positive by the time it passes all these tests.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that these tests won't be able to, like, if they can catch it from the rest of the population, people are like, why can't they catch it from these blood samples? Like, it seems like they're just looking for a reason to ban this. Because also, like, so men who've had sex with men immediately have to defer for a year, or... a woman who's had sex with a man who's had sex with a man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's also a question on there. But then anyone else who's had, like, N number of sexual partners, like, it's just this very specific group that they're banning, and it's, uh-huh. like, why?
Yeah.
It seems, if you can catch things from these tests, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like this is a rule that needs to be looked into once more.
Yeah, I was especially kind of peeved about the sex in exchange for, like, drugs or money.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, do you not want sex worker blood? Like, I don't understand that.
And just the assumption that it's going to be some quote-unquote, like, dirty blood, like...
That's so weird to me.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I know. When I, like, did that survey, I was like, what the heck? And it says, like, to leave anything blank that you didn't understand. I was like, I don't understand this. I'm leaving it blank. Me being so annoying. And then they, like, took me into a back room of the van. They're like, have you had sex for... I was like, oh, shit. Like, I should have just, like, answered it instead of...
Yeah.
being interrogated in this back room, but it's just a weird question, and...
It is a weird question, yeah. And I know that, and, like, people are asking questions about it, so, like, sure, I may not be informed, but they are, and if they mm-hmm. are able to ask questions, then maybe it's something that's worth asking questions.
Yeah, yeah, I was talking about that with my roommate, because I guess all I talk about is my freaking podcast now, and he was just like, well, that makes sense, because... sex workers are more likely to have, like, AIDS or something. I was like, I mean, maybe, but I feel like there are people who have sex outside of sex work that's unsafe, and even
yeah.
as frequent as a sex worker might, just because there's money involved doesn't mean there's also disease involved. It was
exactly.
just weird. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that, sorry, I just remembered another thing that I read. So they have this, like, blanket ban on, like,
mm-hmm.
Donating blood if a man has had sex with a man. But they don't even, like, have exceptions for people who are on HIV medication or in monogamous relationships or, like, have, like, confirmed safe sex. Like, these are all things that are fixing all the problems that they say exist, but they just refuse to acknowledge that.
And, like, if you're tested before, like, does that, is that in consideration at all? I guess they don't ask if you're, do they ask if you're HIV positive?
They do.
Okay.
I feel like I've seen that question. Yeah.
They yeah, why wouldn't they ask that? Yeah. But if you were HIV negative and also gay, like, that doesn't, it doesn't matter.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Okay, so then at the end of your article, you give this really awesome, very passionate call to action to the readers. You say, like, go give blood. What do you have to say here today to reiterate that same call?
Like, do it. That sounds super, like, simple, but, like, I know it's scary for a lot of people, and I get it. Like, my roommate was terrified, and I went with her, and then you can tell the phlebotomist that I don't want to see blood, I don't want to see needles, and they'll tell you, they're like, okay, if you want to stop looking, look away now. And she didn't, like, have to look at any of it, and I just stood there, and I made bad puns the whole time. Aww. So, yeah, like, find a buddy and just go with them, because the whole process takes, like, the actual donation takes, like, 8 to 10 minutes. Uh-huh. It's just the going in and the questionnaire and the, like, stuff after, like, where you drink juice and eat crackers, like, yeah.
You know.
But, yeah, and so it is scary, but there are ways to, like, distract yourself or, like, ways to get around it, but, yeah, it's so important. Like, you're literally saving lives out here, and I feel like you can't put a price on that.
Remember, that is Blood Donation 101, a crash course in donating blood and why you shouldn't be afraid, from the wellness section.
This podcast is also brought to you by Global Innovation Exchange. Are you ready to lead the development of innovative solutions for connected devices or robotics? The UDEM Master of Science and Technology Innovation, MSTI, offered by the Global Innovation Exchange, teaches the skills needed to go from concept to development and onto market. GAX is a new model of experiential education founded by the UW, Tsinghua University, and Microsoft. Work alongside industry sponsors to get hands-on experience. Courses are focused in the areas of design thinking, technology development, and entrepreneurship. Learn more at our next info session on October 3rd at 6 p.m. at the UW Allen Library Auditorium, and explore our cutting-edge space on December 5th at 5:20 p.m. at the Global Innovation Exchange in Bellevue. Learn more and sign up at gixnetwork.org. GIX, design, build, launch.
I don't really know how to transition from blood donation into vaping, so I'm just going to do it. Okay, so I am joined by Tim Fung. Tim, say hi.
Hi.
Hi. I was looking through your articles, and they all say contributing writer, so is this, like, your first non-dev class article?
It is, Hannah. Oh! I just got hired yesterday, so...
He says Hannah. Oh my god, that's so cool. Actually, congratulations. That's
Thank
really
you.
Cool. That's fun. So Tim has written this super cool piece on vaping for the wellness section, and it's called You Should Probably Stop Vaping Well Eventually. And that is, like, the funniest title. I literally love that. That is so funny.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, I did come up with it myself.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so good. I like it a lot. So I thought, since this podcast was all about vaping, we should just vape the whole time.
I mean, you said there were ventilation problems. I don't know.
Just, like, taking hits the whole time. Just kidding. So I think this article is really interesting, especially because it comes from you. Because you vape, right?
Yeah, I do.
You're a vapor.
I vaped, like, 5 minutes before I got here.
A vape god? Real. Like, how do you... that's like, your identity?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Wait, you vaped 5 minutes before you got here?
Well, I mean, I get nervous. I need a hit of nicotine. Oh. You know, even after I wrote this article, I'm like, still kind of need it for now.
For now.
For now.
You quit eventually. That's the takeaway. And we were initially going to have someone who has just quit vaping, and so I thought that would have been interesting. They couldn't show up. It's okay, because we have me, someone who doesn't vape, and then Tim, someone who does vape. So we do have two pretty cool perspectives. So how has, like, the recent news about vape-related illness and death affected how you view your vaping habits?
I'm actually getting really scared about it, because they say that a lot of it's being attributed to the vitamin E that's found in a lot of THC products, but there are also some that aren't really attributed to those products.
Okay.
So I'm starting to worry, especially with all the media has been saying, the bans that are going on, and then how there's just not much known.
Yeah, that's super scary. Do you vape THC or just nicotine?
Just nicotine.
Okay. Yeah, those were the days we could vape THC. A good time in our lives.
I mean, I prefer different methods, but okay. Yeah.
So, do you want to just give us a quick rundown of what your article is saying?
Yeah. Well, essentially, I'm trying to say it's a good idea to quit vaping. Mm-hmm. However, it's not a feat that's easily done.
Right.
Because we got to really recognize that addiction is a real problem out there. Because it's easy to say, hey, you should just stop vaping. But, you know, you get that temptation of maybe smoking a cigarette. You see somebody else smoking a Juul. And then you're like, hey, let me get in on that. So I feel like it's just really hard to just say, hey, you should just quit.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what the article is really trying to say. And then it also points out their health issues that arise from vaping, especially those THC products that I mentioned earlier, and how they've been finding this vitamin E acetate in them, which causes fats to form in your lungs.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wait, that's so gross.
It is.
Wait, that's scary. Oh, my God, don't tell me that.
I mean...
actually, do tell me that. That's super important.
You should know, yeah.
Yeah. Wait, so your lungs get, like, full of fat?
Yeah.
Kind of? That's scary. Is that why people, like, cough up blood? Like, or is that from something else?
That's probably from something else. Okay. I didn't get a really clear answer because right now we're still in limbo about the information about what causes it, what's happening in the lungs.
That's so scary. So, addiction.
Yeah.
Addiction is a very real issue, obviously. And lately, I feel like I see everyone on their Snapchat story, like, throwing their Juul in the trash can and, like, having a Juul funeral or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in your article, you have this quote I really liked, and it was from Dr. Susan Collins. It's one of the most addictive substances we have, on par with opioids like heroin. What? That's so crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll see people literally in Odegaard, like, hitting their Juul, you know? I can't believe, like, people my age at my school have, like, something that is comparable to heroin, and, like, mm-hmm. that's so crazy. Who all did you talk to?
Well, I talked to three different doctors, three or four, I actually can't remember right now. And then they all had a lot to say about the actual kind of vapor going into your lungs. Mm-hmm. But one of them really made it clear that nicotine itself isn't as dangerous. It's just the actual vapor itself.
Right.
And then the other additives, compounds that are being put in there. So I'd like to think that nicotine is better than heroin.
Right.
But the thing is, it is still addictive. And then the only way you can get nicotine is through these different methods of smoking and then vaping, which aren't exactly great for your lungs. Honestly, anything in your lungs isn't great other than fresh air.
Right. Yeah. I did last year when I was in Dev. I did a two-part series on Juuling and, like, all the different things you can vape out of, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then the follow-up was a conversation with a UW, like, doctor or whatever. And he was telling me that vaping is, like, most certainly safer than smoking. And this was, like, before all this was coming out. And he was very adamant, like, it's better. But I don't know. Because my mom is really, she's really, like, a concerned, like, white mom, I guess. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, you're gonna die if you, and she was always like, vaping, one day it's gonna come out that vaping's so horrible for mm-hmm. you, and everyone's gonna be freaking out over this. And so I always kind of had that in the back of my mind, and I feel like a lot of people did, but it's just so crazy that, like, we had medical professionals standing by vaping, and now it's, like, in the span of weeks, it's like, you vape, you have to quit. Like, mm-hmm. it's so taboo now. How's that, like, affected you?
Well, I feel like the change in the ideas of medical professionals has come because there's more research being done right mm-hmm. now, and especially with the CDC calling out vaping as something dangerous. It's really changed a lot of minds, and now people are actually looking into it. Because I was talking to one doctor, mm-hmm. and he said, I'm very sure that these illnesses have been happening before. It's just that they haven't been reported so much because it just hasn't been talked about. It wasn't really reported to the national level.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting.
So personally, I am scared about vaping. I'll be straightforward. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why I do plan on quitting myself.
Right. Do you have any, like, strategies for that?
You see, I've already tried to quit once.
Oh, when?
About a month ago.
Okay.
As terrible as that sounds, yeah.
No, it's a journey. Progress mm-hmm. is not a straight line. That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
But what were, like, your pitfalls in the month ago that you tried to quit?
Well, I quit before I got back up to Seattle and saw everybody, all my friends and such. Mm-hmm. And then it's not like all of them do vape, but mm-hmm. let's say one of them has a vape, I'll just be like, oh, hey, I quit. And I'm like, I need a little hit. And then you just get back on it. Right. And then you start getting into it. You buy one again.
You buy one again. Yeah. No.
You drop that money. It's not pretty.
That sucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like it is so accessible because I feel like all my friends have like a Juul or something. Mm-hmm. It's just like
you can just walk into any convenience store and they'll just sell you one.
Yeah.
There's very little regulation. You just got to be over 18. Well, now there's a ban, but before that, it was just very accessible.
So what is the takeaway in all this? What do you want people to know?
Well, I want people to know that it's not exactly safe to vape, but it's. Well, one of the doctors that I spoke to said that it wasn't as bad as smoking, mm-hmm. like actual cigarettes, which I think is a very good comparison, but at the same time, we should start really looking into the chemical substances itself that are in vaporizers, because it's not really known.
Yeah.
But generally, I'd say quitting is the best option if you want to maintain your health. But, you know, it's not up to me to say, hey, you should quit, because everybody can do anything they want.
Exactly. I just, like, I know, like, we try to compare cigarettes and, like, vaping all the time, but it's just we have so much more time with cigarettes and so much more research that's hard to make any comparison. I just like to think, people always say that vaping is, like, safer, and it's like, okay, well, like, if you jump off in a 100-foot building versus a 50-foot building, you're probably still gonna die.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, like, one is safer, you know? Mm-hmm. But then now it's like we don't know what vaping is, so it's like an 100-foot building and then an unknown like height building.
Yeah.
And maybe it is super safe and this is like coincidental. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but it's scary for sure. Mm-hmm. So tell me about Tobacco Talks.
Okay, so Tobacco Talk is a program run by Hall Health that helps students, faculty, other staff at UW quit using nicotine tobacco products.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's free.
No way.
Yeah, it's free. So you go in there, it's kind of like counseling. They help you out. They help you identify why do you want to quit? What's the issue? How is it impacting your life? And then they can set you up with gums, lozenges, and such that help you quit. Like, you know, the patch, the nicotine patches.
They give those to you?
Yeah, they give those to you.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. This is at Hall Health?
Yeah, this is at Hall Health.
Oh, my gosh. Now you can get condoms and nicotine patch at Hall mm-hmm. Health. Hall Health is the plug. Oh,
Hall
my
Health
God.
Is the best.
Wait, that's so cool. Have you gone?
I have not, actually.
Oh, my gosh. Take your own advice, Tim. What the hell?
I know. Like, I feel hypocritical not taking the advice, but, you know.
No, it's your own journey. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I have the resources now.
Yeah, and that's super cool. I'm glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that covers it on that article. Please be sure to give Tim some love on his article and his work in his dev course. Those three articles are also up on the Daily website right now. Hope that you're back here next time. Thanks for listening.